Hi everybody, Will Alexander from Will Alexander's Dog Show Tips. Brought to you by Canine Chronicle Television and ProPlan, Nutrition That Performs. Today on the interview chair we have Mr. Thomas Bradley III, Mr. Westminster himself. I'm sure it'll be enjoyable.
Hi, everybody. Today we have Mr. Thomas Bradley III. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing great, Will. Thanks. It's a beautiful day here.
Well, it's good to see you. It looks beautiful there, for sure. Well, let's get right at it. Tell me how you got involved in dogs, Tom.
Well, that's an easy answer. My father answered it for me. People said to him, "How did your son get involved in all these dogs?" And he said, "It's my fault. If I only knew what one little horse would have cost me." So that's it. No horse, but I settled for a dog, and that started the whole thing.
What breed did you start with, Tom?
German Shorthairs.
Okay.
Yep. 1954.
Yeah. How old were you then?
14.
14.
Wow. Just a kid.
Tell me how you got involved in the sport then.
Well, we had a local kennel club starting, and I signed up to become a member. I was 13 or 14 years old. I didn't really know what a kennel club was or what they did, but we had what I called dog shows, which were really matches, trying to get recognized by the kennel club to become a regular dog show, and one of the people. You'll appreciate this story. One of the people who came to our match was a Mrs. Betty Hislop from Brockville, Ontario. You know, Betty lives within an hour of me, but people don't understand that. But you and I understand it's one side of the border or the other. And so one of the first shows that I went to were Canadian Save the Children Fund in Ottawa.
And save,
yeah. And I was there. I had to get a friend to take me because I couldn't drive yet. I was 15. And she pulled in one of her blue station wagons and screaming Cairn Terriers and kind of parked near me. And finally she came over and she said, "Could you help me? Could you boys help me show these dogs?" And we said, "Well, no, we really don't know how to do that." "Oh, just," she said, "I've just got too many. You have to help." So we said, "Okay." And so she bought us lunch. And that was the beginning of a friendship that lasted all of her life, really, to the end. And she really, in later that year, she came. My parents had a house at the Thousand Island Club on Wellesley Island. And she came to have dinner there with one of her beaus. And so my mother said, "That woman's waving at you." I said, "What woman's waving at me? I don't know. That woman over there, the red hair." Said, "Oh, that's the dog lady from Canada." So she said to me, "Are you going to go to Westchester?" And I said, "Well, I'd like to, but I don't have any way to get you." "Don't you worry, dear. I'll pick you up." And that's what started.
Wow. So,
she's the one who actually introduced me to a lot of people and pushed me a little bit to do better.
Wow. I didn't realize Betty had that. I knew you were very close. I didn't know that much of an impact at the beginning. That's
yeah. Something. Well, you know, I often say, Will, that Betty was very nice to Jim Reynolds and myself. Jim was showing dogs in those days, and we were both able to be her extra non-costing handlers because she always had two or three class dogs, two or three class bitches, and Lord knows how many specials. Why so many specials? Well, I'm not quite sure what color they want, so we would take them all.
So that was, you guys showed on both sides of the border helping Betty then?
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Indeed.
When did you meet Jim then?
That's a tougher one. Jim was still showing Scotty, so I don't know what year it was. I don't really remember, but that goes on to way too long stories.
That's great. So where did it go from there? How long did you, how did the German short hair do?
Well, he finished, and it wasn't an easy it wasn't an easy road, but that's all it took. And he wasn't a great one, but he was a decent one, and he finished. And then one short hair leads to another. Really, after that, I got somewhat involved in field trials. We started a local German short hair club. In those days, there were 9 short hair clubs in New York State alone. We each held specialty shows. We each had field trials spring and fall. Nowadays, I think there may be 2, maybe 3 tops. Hard to find field trial grounds today, and anywhere you are. But that would introduce me to another, a little different world of dogs. But I continue with that, and I had some partners. We bred short hairs for quite a while, and one thing leads to another. Short hair led to an English Cocker, led to a Pointer, led to a Labrador.
Okay, I want to keep going with this though. So you had the short hair, and then the Pointers. Because we know how impactful you were with the Pointers when you first started with Michael showing the dogs. And can you go into that for me?
Sure. Actually, the
If you want to go at the beginning, and that's even better. I don't care.
Okay, I'll tell you how I got to Pointers. I wanted an English Cocker, and so I shopped around and found a lady in Michigan, and so she had a wonderful blue roan dog, and so I bought him. Pardon me.
What did you find in Michigan?
You're pushing me. Maple Lawn. His name was Maple Lawn Silver Sovereign. Her name was Jean Glass.
Yeah.
And so I took one look at this hairy beast and said, I don't know anything about hair. I've only had German short hair pointers. So I found Karen Prickett Miller. And Karen and Mickey and I became very, very close friends for many years. It was she showed him, and he was never one English Cocker, but he was ranked right up there. And a quick story is that they called me up one Christmas and said, we have a Christmas present for you, but it's here, and you've got to come to, when you come to Detroit in March, you have to come see. So I did, and I went out, and we went out into the kennel, and in the yard, there were a bunch of 4, 5, 6-month-old Springers charging around. And she said, which one do you like best? And I said, that black and white one right there. And she jumped up and down and said, Mickey, he found him. Well, that turned out to be Lou John Black Label, who was the top winning Springer as far as specialty shows for many years until we stopped with him. And he, Jack, his name, we called him Jack. And he and I were the closest of friends. It was interesting to see that kind of relationship. I would only see him maybe a half a dozen times a year. But the first time I saw him, he was a baby. We were in Virginia, and a girl came into the hotel room, and he was just a baby. I mean, 7, 6, 7, 8 months old. And he growled at her. And Mickey pricked him up and shook him, picked him up behind by the neck and the tail, and shook him and said, we don't do that. And really shook him hard and put him down. And he looked around, and I said, come here, Jack. And he came next to me, and I put my arm around him. I said, you stay with me. I'll protect you the rest of your life. And to that day, I would go out, and they would meet me at the airport, and Jack would come in the van. And by the time before I got to open the door, the van was rocking back and forth, and we had that kind of relationship for a long time. And I called Karen up one day. You're going to get me emotional now. And I said, just checking on you, see how things are going. She said, I was going to call you this morning. And I said, you were? Why? And she said, we lost Jack last night. And so who knows what led me to make that call, but I'm glad it did. And he was a wonderful dog.
Wow, that's a good story. And then from there you went with, after English Cocker.
Well, oh, that's how we got to, sorry, that's how we got to Pointers. She was showing a dog for a young couple in Lexington. And It was a humble acre dog. And she said, I want you to look at this dog. And I've done a little winning with him. And I said, well, he's a nice pointer. I said, I don't think he's a great one, but he's a nice one. And how much did they pay for him? And she told me, and I said, well, they got their money's worth. This is going to be a nice dog. Next time I saw him, he went best in breed at Westminster. And we went, oh my, this is, are you sure he went best in breed at Westminster? Well, long story short, he also won the National Specialty and won the breed at Westminster the following year. Listen, I will be the first to tell you, it was not a great dog, but he was a great attitude dog. He would stand in the middle of the ring, play show dog all day long. And this was in the early 70s. Half of them were crawling around on their bellies with tails tucked. So that's what made him a better show dog, I guess.
There we go. What dog was that?
Humble Acre Sandstorm.
Okay.
He won this national in 1976. Jack Rementer with Gene Ellis marching up and down outside the ring. I'll say no more.
That's great. I remember I first met you, I think I was visiting Mr. Eldridge when I first met you.
Right. I think so too. I remember that, yeah. One of my very, very favorite people.
Mine too.
Yeah, and really one of the reasons I was still in the sport as long as I was, I think.
Really? Yeah. I was just a kid, but he sure had a big impact on me.
So. Yeah, I was so fond of him, and he had such a wonderful way about him, and a way about breeding dogs and livestock. You know, he was kind of like my friend Bob Whaley. He was a breeder. They bred chickens and they bred goats and they bred cows and they happened to breed damn good dogs.
That was amazing. Sorry, you got off topic there a bit. I'm sorry. So we're on to pointers.
Yep. Well, okay, so that led to the pointer. And so I said, well, who are this young couple that have this dog? Well, they can't afford to show him. And I said, well, maybe we should become partners. And that led to my first pointer. And that led to a lot of other pointers. Then we went and I was able to get a two dogs from Erica McCurley in those days. And that started my breeding program. We didn't use Sandstorm much as a stud dog, only once or twice. But and then we ended up with Opulence, or we called her Opal. And Opal was leased by Mrs. Robeson and Michael to be Bee's mother.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's where we started from then.
Yeah.
That part started. Nice.
Yep.
How did she do? So she was Bee's mother, and that was, was Opal shown as well?
Oh yes, she won a group under Roy Holloway a couple of, and she hated dog shows, but Michael Zolo showed her in those days, I said, how'd you get her to do that? He said, I almost lost her halfway down. I reached down and punched her. I said, don't you do that? And she behaved herself and stood up and won the group. Little tricks of the trade.
Tell me, okay, so now Michael's on the scene. When you got Bees, did you know when Bees was born, did you know that what she was going to turn into?
I'm sorry?
When Bees was whelped, when you whelped Bees, did you realize who she was going to be?
Okay, I did not whelp her. Michael whelped her.
Okay.
She was bred, as you know, to deputy, and he whelped her, and he whelped both litters, actually. She was bred to Debbie again the second time.
But you were on it, weren't you on as breeder as well?
Yes, because I when I leased her to Mrs. Robeson, Michael and I both stayed on as co-owners.
Okay.
Therefore, breeders, yeah. But I did not actually, I didn't whelp her.
Okay. But were you involved in her campaign?
No.
Not at all.
No. No, not really. Mrs. Robeson ran her own ship.
Okay.
now that the days are over with, I can tell you another story. The second litter produced a dog called Lufnasa Booker T. Washington.
I remember,
big black and white dog. And he won two 5-point won a big sweepstakes or futurity, and then won 2 5-point majors. And Mrs. Robeson said to Michael, "Why isn't my kennel name on that dog?" Well, he said, "You know, Mrs. Robeson, you just leased the bitch for a year." And, "Well, I really want my name on her." And he said, "Well, I think I can take care of that, Mrs. Robeson." And so the dog was re-registered as Abelarm Lufnasa Booker T. Booker T won 3 5-point majors and finished with 5 5-point majors. Oh my, those days, you did strange. Fortunately, I didn't know about it till afterwards, long afterwards.
When did you first start with Westminster, Tom?
I was a member, thanks to Mr. Eldridge, 1975 or six. Ted nominated me and introduced me to the club, and then my years are not very good. Will, I forget what year we did this, but then I became, eventually, Chet Collier came to me and said, "How would you be interested in running the PR?" And I said, "Well, you know, I've never done anything like that." And I said, he said, "You'll be fine." And I said, "Okay." So I took over the PR and did that for 7 or 8 years, maybe. And then when Chet was retiring, he said to me, "I want you to be the show chairman." And I said, "Okay." And so I did that for 16 years and retired.
Bet you have some good stories about those years.
Oh my! We haven't got anywhere near enough time for those stories.
Not even one or two.
Well, they were. You know, I had experience running shows, and I use that word in quotes, because sometime in the earlier 70s. The Stevensons took me under their wing, and I got to go to judge at Santa Barbara quite a few times. And then they asked me if I would be the show chairman. And I said, "Well, you know, I can't. I live in Watertown, New York. I can't be there." And they said, "You can." And they really, being the show chairman of Santa Barbara in those days was kind of being like head of the cleanup crew. I mean, the Stevensons did everything. I mean, in detail. And that was Tom Stevenson. That's where I learned how to run dog shows. Detail, detail, detail. And no detail is too small not to pay attention to. And that was a great lesson for me. I would fly out along with a whole bunch of a number of people. I mean, Jim and Ann Clark, Dick and John, Frank Sabella. And we would all meet there in Santa Barbara and spend the week putting on the dog show with the Stevensons. And it was a great experience, not only that part of it, but the Stevensons didn't have a dining room. They had a big kitchen table. And let me tell you, those dinners were a lesson that no one could ever duplicate, from people, from judges from all over the world to just day-to-day people who were of interest to the sport. But you learned a lot. You learned a lot. Yeah.
Oh, wow, that'd be incredible. What do you think is, let's get right down. What's your favorite breed, Tom?
No way.
No? You know.
Still working on it. Oh, my goodness, my favorite breed. All right, let me think about this for a little bit. Okay, my favorite breed is alphabetically greyhounds, Labradors, Pointers, and Whippets.
Okay, I didn't realize the sighthound part of it. Wow.
Well, I've had a couple of Whippets and a Greyhound, yeah.
I didn't realize that. What about mentors? I know we talked about Betty, and we even talked about Mr. E. What other mentors do you have in your life in the sport?
Oh boy, that list is long, too. Some of these people will be familiar names to people on this who listen to this program, and some not. Bob Whaley was the master breeder of field trial pointers. My house where I am right now in Henderson is a half a mile from what was his home. And it's now a 2,500-acre state park. Bob Whaley bred the Elihu field trial pointers there. They've won more national field trial championships than, and I'm talking American Field, not American Kennel Club, than anybody else. And he was like Ted Eldridge, was a breeder. He bred the first horse to win $1 million in New York State, a horse called Win. Now, he sold him as a youngster because he didn't like the people at the track, but he liked to breed horses. And he bred fancy chickens, and it's endless. And but he was a very, very close friend for many years, and a very dear friend, and taught me a lot. His attitude about people in this sport was invaluable. I have to say that. Ted, as we said, Len Brumby ran the AKC judges program for those days, and did it exactly correctly. The only thing I didn't ever do what he told me to do was go for another group. And I just had sporting dogs, and that's all I really wanted to judge. But he would say, Mr. Brumby, I'd like to apply for some more breeds. Or he'd call you up and say, it's time for you to apply for some more breeds. And this is what you should apply for. And I clearly remember doing Cockers, Brittany's, Plumbers, and Springers. He said, you can't do Cockers and Springers at the same time. And I said, oh, come on, I'll be all right. So I applied. Well, I didn't get Springers the first time. You did what he told you to do. I learned my lesson quickly. And he took young people like myself in the sport and seriously took you under his wing and guided you. And I know that Mr. Bivin and I have this conversation frequently, and we both feel exactly the same way about it. He was a wonderful, wonderful dog man. Of course, as I said, the Stevensons. I mean, Ann Stevenson called me up in April of 1975 and said, I need you to stand by, dear, to judge Clumbers, because it's the day after the National Specialty, and I don't think our judge is going to be able to do it. And I said, well, that's fine. You just tell me what you want. She said, I want you to do those six dogs at the end of the day. And I said, six dogs at the end of the day? Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I said, I'd love to do the best in show for you, Ann, but I'm not approved by the Kennel Club. And she said, yes, you are. I said, no, I'm not. And she said, as of yesterday afternoon, you were approved by the board to judge the group. Therefore, you are eligible to do best in show. And I said, man, if that could be true, but I'm certainly not doing best in show at Santa Barbara when I've never even judged a sporting group. And she said, yes, you are. And I did. So I had never judged a sporting group, but I did best in show at Santa Barbara. There were 4,000 dogs. It also was a lifetime experience. I can tell you who all six of them were too, but do I get into that?
Well, I want to hear. Who were they?
Well, now you're going to push me. The sporting dog was a dog called Champion Renzfeld Newsflash, shown by his owner, Mr. Pagendaline. The hound now is escaping me, but it'll come back. The working dog, there wasn't a herding grip. The working dog, no, I can't do it, Will. I used to be able to rattle them right off. And
what did you miss the show to?
Mr. Green was there with a Norwich Terrier that I think was just too special. I think it was a Norwich. Now I can't remember if Norwich or Norfolk. But it was one of Ruthie Cooper's, and the dog that did a lot of winning. The non-sporting was a Kiss Me Kate, the standard poodle.
Oh, wow.
From the Midwest somewhere.
He was a beauty.
The hound, gosh, I couldn't, if I had my list in front of me, I could point it out. But the palm was Susie Fisher showing a palm for Lady Conyers from Bermuda. And I guess I'm getting most of them. No, the working dog I remember was a 9-year-old Siberian Husky. And that wasn't who was supposed to be there. It was supposed to be a Doberman, and I don't remember which one, but that was the big winner of the day. And the poor hounds got left out. I don't remember who it was. But it was a lot of fun, I'll tell you. And the worst part is I had no idea how long I'd been out there. And so I went to one of the exhibits, actually went to Kiss Me Kate, and I bent down in front of her and took her front in my hands and turned my wrist and looked at my watch, because I didn't want to just go, well, what time is it? So I found out it was time. And so Mrs. Clark afterwards said, why did you do that? And I said, drove you crazy, didn't it? And she said, yes, it did. Mrs. Clark was not one of her fans.
So, yeah, Tom and Ann, or any other mentors come to mind?
I think that pretty much does. Well, other than Chet, of course, and that kind of goes without saying.
On a personal level, I want to know a little more about Mr. E.
I was invited to, first time I met him, I was showing German Shorthair Pointers at Westchester, 1964, maybe 65, along there. And I was given a Shorthair. And she happened to be the top bitch in the country the year before, but the people who owned her were moving south to the shooting area, and she was not a gun dog, and they had other dogs to take. And Tom Crow got her for me. Tom Crow said to me, I want to talk to you one day. And he had shown dogs for them, and their name was Andrews. And so he would you be interested? And he came to see me the next day, and he said, can you come see me? And I went to see him, and he said, I've spoken to Mr. and Mrs. Andrews. They're going to ship the dog to you next week. And her name was Champion Wege Sheba Bruner. She was white with liver spots, and which is somewhat unusual in those days. And we used to say that came from Swedish blood, but actually that the white has always been in the breed, more so today now. And she did a lot of winning, but Ted gave her the breed over. Robin Crest Chip, who was one of the top sporting dogs in the country. And that's true. But he also gave her the breed up in Vermont in the New England circuit before that. And that's what really introduced us. And I was a delegate those days, and I was on the nominating committee for maybe officers for the year, whatever the nominating committee did. And I went to Trevelda for the first time. And he said, come a day or two early. And I did. And we did a lot of Irish setter talks. And I mean, I've never had the breed, but it certainly is one of my very favorite breeds. And, you know, the biggest honor I have in judging is I was invited to have been invited to do their national four times. And, I loved the breed. I loved judging the breed. And in retiring, it's one of the things I really miss, and not a chance to walk back into a ring with a bunch of red dogs.
Yeah, I always loved showing Irish setters to you. I could tell you knew what you liked. I thought I did anyway. So.
Well, you did. It was pretty easy. It was pretty obvious what I liked.
That was just when you were on the panel for Irish Setters, it seemed like the Irish Setter world came to life to be there to see you. So.
Yeah, it was fun. I judged bitches one year in California, I think, I gave winners. I awarded winner's bitch to she might have been a 12 to 18. She might have also been a bred by. I'm not sure what class she came out of. And great whooping, hollering, and then I gave reserve to her litter sister, apparently, and there were like 200 bitches, you know, and I didn't have any idea who these two were or anything else, but that brought the house down. And I kept saying, people were weeping and crying and jumping up and down. I said, what's going on? Well, they're sisters. And I was right. Mine was the producer, and the reserve was the winner. She went on to be the top Irish setter more than once, a couple of years. Beautiful bitches, both of them.
So where are you going to go from here? So you're retired now, but you still have dogs.
I still have dogs, and I have a 14-and-a-half-year-old young border terrier bitch living here. And
Do you have borders yet?
Border, yeah. Well, that's another long story. Years ago, I bought a walking stick from Dennis. Dennis, who did bronze work, he was a terrier handler from the state of what? Dennis
Springer.
Springer, yes. Yeah, I started to say I knew it wasn't Sprung, but I knew it was pretty close. and I don't know why I bought one, but so here I am, 14 and a half years later, with this monster who lives with me and controls my life.
Love that breed. It's a wonderful.
They're a wonderful breed, but I don't do hair, so I don't know what I'll do next. I have no idea. I'm guessing probably black.
Yeah.
Some black dog.
Black dog. That's. Do we have an idea what breed it is? Then you obviously do.
Yeah, I would think a Labrador.
Yeah, I love that. I had a black lab myself too. They're a wonderful breed.
Actually, I am showing a couple dogs right now. Actually, four. Well, almost four. We have two pointers out with bred by, and fortunately, I've been able to co-own them with Dennis Brown and Katie. And Black and White Bitch has done really well. She won Florida and AKC show, and she won Westminster, and she's had a Best in Show and a bunch of reserves, and she's just growing up now that she can't go to dog shows very often. But she'll be back and she'll do fine. And many years ago, Jim Smith and I became friends. Jim Smith, who lived near Buffalo and a master breeder of smooth fox terriers, and we were good friends. We were not let's have dinner friends, but we were good friends. And after he passed, I called up Dana Gable, who was his partner, and said, you know, if I'm looking for a smooth bitch to have, maybe when after the border terrier goes. And she said, one thing led to another. Why don't you co-own Chuck with me? And I said, that's fine. Who's Chuck? And she said, well, Chuck's the number one smooth in the country. I said, oh, that's kind of interesting. I was just thinking for a pet, and you should do this. It'll be a lot of fun. And I said, okay. So Chuck ended up last year as number one. Last year, too, is number one. And he's in the stud dog ranks now. And so all of a sudden, I got this picture of a bitch. And she was 5 months old. And I said, oh, who's this? And she said, well, this is... Absolutely Smitten. And I said, what a great name. Yeah, sure. So Smitten is now being shown. She's finished, and she's doing very well. She has some head group placements in this last go round of shows recently. And now today she's in Kansas, for God's sakes. But that's where you go to dog shows.
That's where the show is. Any thoughts on today's current judging process, Tom?
Well, you know, I think I alluded to your question earlier a little bit. I think the way that Len Brumby taught us to do it, come along slowly and, you know, give you three or four breeds at a time, get your feet wet, get to know breeders, get to know You know, I'm not ashamed to say that I judged particular breeds differently when I ended than when I did when I started. You learn by going to specialties, by talking to breeders, and I think that's one of the breeds that I certainly judged entirely differently than when I started judging them were Labradors, and we were my partner Peter Souch and I were very successful and somewhat successful in, well, we were the number two breeder in the parent club the second year we ever bred Labradors, but that was all kind of by mistake because the Labrador ladies knew me well enough by then. They let me have a good bitch and they kind of guided me as to where she should be bred and after she finished. And so it was pure happenstance that we were more surprised than they were, I think, to be the number two breeder in the country. But I think that it's a breed that when you're into it, it's so natural for me. I did the Boston specialty one year and Norman Grenier. I had 20 some in the open black class, and I finally got through placing them. And Norman was in second place, and he was shaking his head as I went by and said, "But Bradley strikes again." So, you know me, I got a little puffy. What do you mean by that? He said, Arnold daughter. Well, Dickendall Arnold was my very favorite stud dog. And for me to pick four of his daughters was not a surprise, but it was a surprise. I'm glad I did it. But, that's the kind of eye, where your eye goes, I think, is being correct.
Any advice for up-and-coming judges then, Tom?
I guess the best advice I think, maybe this is an 80-year-old speaking, but keep your eyes open and your mouth shut. Just listen to people, listen to what they're saying, listen to people who have more experience than you do, and ask questions. But don't think just because you've got after your name says judge of XYZ breed that you know all about them, because you don't. And you really need to speak to people and talk to people and learn. It's a continual learning process. If you don't learn every day, then you're not doing a very good job.
Is there a dog out there you wish you could have been a part of?
You ask me these easy questions all the time. One of my favorite dogs that I wish I had been a part of was Champion Vidmelka's Rolls Royce. Silver Shadow, known as Royce.
Okay.
Michael Scott showed him for Pat Trotter, and he was a wonderful dog. He was a wonderful elk hound, but he was a wonderful character. And I think that if I, that's what I would base it on, not maybe his, he was a great dog, but he also was a great character. He would sleep with me when we traveled together. And he always knew I was around and made lots of racket and lots of noise but he was a great all round dog. I loved him.
Okay, one last question then, Tom.
Okay.
You could give advice to the 20-year-old Thomas Bradley III. What advice would you give him?
If I could give myself advice, if I was only 20 year old, that'd be the same advice. Shut your mouth and open your eyes and open your ears and listen. I think that's the best advice I could give anybody, but pay attention to the professionals in the sport, you know more than most people, were amateurs at one day. They just learned. They learned by watching. They learned by listening. They learned by working with somebody who was better than as an apprentice. And that's it. Don't just want to run around the ring and show your dog and call yourself a professional and wonder why you're not winning, because you're just a good amateur. That's all. But I think this sport depends a lot on history, and it depends on a lot on I think this sport for me has more kind people who are willing to help than probably any other sport that we know about. It's usually almost always the top guy who's more than willing, but you got to ask. That's me, I guess.
You're right. Over myself growing up, I used to ask a ton of questions, and I can't remember anybody saying no to my questions. They always.
That's right. But you knew enough to know you didn't have all the answers, which is part of the problem today.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate the time you gave us today. It was really great to see you. And I hope we get to see you soon somewhere. I'm stuck up here for now, but.
Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure. I'm glad it did this, Will. I was a little apprehensive, but this was fun, and it's a great day. I'm glad to share whatever little bit I have. Thank you much.
Definitely fun to see you. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom, for inviting us into your home today for an incredible interview. If you like what we're doing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. And don't forget, if you want to send me any messages or talk to me or even tell me to go away, you can do it at dogshowtips@gmail.com. Or if you just want to look into Will's world, go to willalexander.net. Until next interview, Chair, talk to you soon. Bye-bye.